threat's existence. The thought reminded her that there was more going on around her than a one-on-one duel. Her tunnel vision dispersing, Zone finally noticed the comm crystal vibrating inside the pouch at the back of her waist. The item had somehow avoided being shattered in the battle and served to remind the monk of her role in the siege, one that she had completely and utterly failed to fulfill. Looking up at the tree Fayhorn was using as his perch, she saw he was already engaging the incoming aerial reinforcements. Zone was supposed to intercept and shut down the anti-air threat that ranger posed, providing cover for that dragon-riding mercenary to make his approach. She was clearly not doing that, having been drawn into her own little world where the only things that mattered were herself and her opponent. This habit of hers was a very, very bad thing, and also the main reason why Edward loathed to trust her with any mission that was more complex than smash the thing. Having remembered her actual orders, Zone took advantage of the distance between her and the dwarf and conjured up her angelic wings. Her body soared into the air with a single mighty beat, and she rapidly gained altitude.
Oi! Where do you think you're going?
Hilda yelled from the ground.
I'm not done with you!
She tossed several enchanted axes after the ascending monk, but failed to so much as graze her. In the next instant, the dwarf realized where the woman was headed. She fumbled around the pouch on her belt, but found that her own comm crystal had not survived the brawl. Must have been that one good kick that Jen had gotten on her earlier. Well, someone was bound to see and report that eyesore of an angel's movements, so Fayhorn would just have to deal with her in his own way. Besides, Hilda didn't exactly have the luxury to worry about other people, as Imperial soldiers still surrounded her on all sides. Her wounds had piled up by now, and her HP was dangerously low. At the very least, those humans were hesitant to get near her. The duel unfolding before their eyes was too absurd for any of them to follow, and a few of them had gotten needlessly caught up in it and lost their lives. The dwarf hurriedly rearmed herself with her favorite oversized axe and glared viciously at those around her, sending them several steps back in fear. This was the natural response to seeing her bring out that monstrous weapon again, but there was more to it than that. Somewhere along the way, the dwarf had obtained the Slayer of Humanity perk after having killed more than 500 of them throughout her lifetime. Its effects on those around her were rather subtle compared to the butcher tier of a certain chest-minded shapeshifter, but it still amplified her natural charm. As a result, she got a bit of extra room to catch her breath, but the damage she had sustained so far was quite serious. She counted no less than 6 bone fractures, felt like the world around her was spinning, couldn't feel her left leg below the knee, and felt a constant, stabbing pain somewhere in her midsection. Her HP was only a third of its original value, and steadily dropping due to internal bleeding. She wouldn't even be standing if not for her stubborn nature and berserker skills propping her up. In short, there was a very real chance she might not make it back to the fort, even if she were to make a beeline for it. Retreating was indeed something she very much wanted to do. Even if she wasn't the sharpest knife in the drawer, she still had enough common sense to realize how deep in trouble she was. One couldn't make it to level 100 if they used their head solely as an explosive delivery device. Granted, nobody would make it past level 1 if they actually did that, but that was beside the point. From where she stood, Hilda recognized the need to retreat and recuperate before another troublesome opponent showed up.
Oh!
Just then, a loud yell rang out behind her in the direction of Fort Yemen's besieged walls. She turned around on her heel to see a towering, four-armed, red-skinned demon plowing her way through the Empire's ranks. The fiend's steel-clad fists sent Imperial troops flying with every punch, while her armored kicks made them bend over in weird, unnatural shapes. Her bright green eyes scanned over the heads of her opponents as she rampaged, her stare naturally directed towards the odd gap surrounding Hilda. The two berserkers momentarily locked eyes, each of them confirming the burning fury within the other's glare. Locating her target, the towering demon leapt an astounding 20 meters through the air, landing right on the edge of the Empire's encirclement of the dwarf. Her massive weight crushed some poor, unsuspecting soul's skull underfoot, and the surrounding humans immediately made space around her in shock and awe. The blood-splattered, silver-colored cloth tied diagonally across her chest signified her allegiance to the Republic, but the veteran dwarf did not relax in the slightest. This was a natural reaction, as one never knew if a demon on a battlefield was still bound to a master. The two muscleheads glared at each other with vicious grins as they confirmed the other's unique brand of wrath. While Hilda's was a fine-tuned, constant burn that could melt through anything, the other party was a raging inferno no mortal could hope to contain. It was sometimes said that the berserker job originated from the demon world known as the Beyond, and the being before the dwarf's eyes seemed to be the living testament to that.
Ha! Ha 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 ha!
Cora laughed.
That's a good glare you got there, lady. Practically sets my soul ablaze. I love it!
Right back at you, Spikey.
The dwarf humored her.
So, why are you looking around for little old me?
I'm here to send you flying, of course.
The demon answered with a sharp-toothed grin.
I see. Well, then should we get started?
Yes, let's.
Hilda positioned her axe's blade behind her and dashed forward with a guttural roar. The fiend in her sights turned her left shoulders and hip forward as she got ready to meet the charge. Their audience tensed up as the monstrous dwarf jumped at a high speed and thrust her weapon forward. The demon deftly grabbed the upper part of its shaft, just under the massive blade, and spun her body around like a top. After picking up speed for several revolutions, she let go of the weapon, sending it and its owner soaring through the air.
Thanks for the laugh!
The clearly unhinged dwarf's cheery voice trailed off as she hurtled towards the general direction of the fort. Cora watched with a bemused smile as Hilda was caught in the air by a certain blue-skinned succubus that had draped herself in a silver robe just for the occasion. Well, caught was not perhaps the right word, as the dwarf was far too heavy for Zira to do anything of the sort. In the end, all she really did was cushion Hilda's fall with those massive breasts, and was no doubt moaning creepily after being partially crushed under the armored dwarf's weight.
Angry lady retrieval complete, boss!
Cora reported telepathically back to her master while giving four thumbs up to nobody in particular.
Good. Very good.
You sure you want to let her get away so easy? We could have finished her off, you know.
It's regrettable, but going after her life was too risky.
Boxy was able to steal and preserve that holy necromancer's body unnoticed by using the Dryad's root system, but Hilda was another story. She was too far out, too exposed for that to happen without either side noticing its interference. Besides, it seriously doubted that monstrous dwarf would fall that easily just because she was weak. A berserker was at their most dangerous when standing right at death's door, and that dwarf was plenty lethal even without it. In fact, now that Boxy thought about it, she was no doubt even more terrifying than Edward the Spymaster when it came to direct combat. Worse still, even if arms won, the Republic's military leadership already knew her and Snack to be the Sandman's familiars. The warlock was responsible for their familiar's actions, meaning the elven government would no longer do business with the masked mercenary if he blatantly attacked their VIP, win or lose. If Boxy had to choose between getting an obscene amount of shinies or a chance to gain some warlock levels quickly, Boxy would go with the former 10 out of 10 times. That wasn't even taking into consideration the benefits that Kira's personal connection with Hilda might offer one day. Simply put, there was more value in helping the dwarven berserker than trying to kill her. The Imperial grunts that Arms was currently chest deep in, though, those were fair game.
Anyway, just keep doing like you always do,
Boxy commanded.
And keep an eye out for tasty targets. I'll be coming out in a little while.
You got it, boss.
Cora turned her attention to the still dumbfounded mob around her and clenched all four of her fists hard enough to make her knuckles crack.
All right, boys! Who wants to show me a good time?
Part 4.
But it hurts!
Shh, I know, sweetie,
Kira whispered.
But you have to try and bear it.
Castelia desperately clutched the right side of her face and head, curled up on the ground with her head in the redhead's lap. The young dryad's features were charred black and gave off a faint stream of smoke. One could easily see the dull red embers on her cheeks, which ran all the way down to her shoulder. Kira gently stroked the distraught child's hair-like grass in an attempt to soothe her.
But it hurts! Mommy!
It clearly wasn't working.
What a pain! Boxy grumbled internally. At least this tree isn't the one that got hit.
The place Kira and the other dryads occupied was nestled within the crown of Lily's tree, who was on the northwestern end of the front. While it was also on the side facing the enemy, Castilia was the one who ended up shouldering the biggest burden.
Tyrinia, be a dear and help Castilia out. Lily too.
Do we have to?
Replied the two in unison.
Your sister is in pain. You would want help if you were in pain, right?
Yes.
They answered sheepishly.
But how can you expect help if you don't offer it? It wouldn't be fair, right?
Okay, we'll help right away, Mummy.
The two of them got closer to their scorched sister and put their hands on her back. Although a plain action, the fact they could do that at all was quite extraordinary considering their biology. According to Ambrosia, a hilt tree's near infinite vitality was extremely demanding in terms of sustenance, and those needs only grew as the tree aged. As such, the tree's roots would choke the life out of other plants, including their own kind, in an increasingly larger area around them. That was why only simpler and more resilient forms of vegetation, such as weeds, grasses, and shrubs, could thrive anywhere near a hilt tree. Even Azurvale's original 12 were considered very densely packed, despite there being literal kilometers between them. Their case was an exception made possible because they could tap into the vast reserves of natural magical energy that ran underneath them. Sometimes called ley lines or dragon veins, these subterranean rivers of mana were ideal energy sources for the ravenous hilt trees, assuming their roots grew deep enough to tap into them. The hilts at Fort Yemen had none of that. Ambrosia claimed it would be surprising if even two or three of them had survived under these conditions, yet there were five of them. Then there was the fact that their dryads were quite underdeveloped for their age. The way they looked completely identical and acted in total sync with one another only added to the weirdness of their anomalous existence. As it would appear, the root cause for all of these oddities had been just that. Their roots. At some point during their sapling stage, something caused the five trees' roots to fuse together into one gigantic system. As a result, the quintuplets had apparently shared their food for centuries, albeit subconsciously. It was more accurate to think of them as a single five-headed organism than a collection of separate entities. This would certainly explain all of the deviations at Fort Yemen, though the full extent of the side effects brought on by this aberrant mutation was unclear. The connection clearly had its benefits, however. For one thing, the dryads could freely enter each other's trunks, which would normally be impossible even if their trees were close enough for their root systems to overlap. Another benefit, and one that was far more relevant to the current situation, was that they could bolster one another in times of need. Boxy had no idea what Tyrinia and Lily were doing, but it was clearly working. Castilia's charred skin fell off in smoldering clumps and healthy, vibrant green plant flesh rapidly grew to replace it. Considering that a dryad's well-being was a reflection of her tree's condition, this meant that some freshly shed, still burning branches were likely making life difficult for the people outside.
Not too much now,
Kira cautioned.
Wouldn't want you girls getting too tired before the big surprise.
Tyrinia and Lily took their hands off their kin. The right half of the burn victim's face and hair were still somewhat blackened, but at the very least she stopped crying. It was clear the girl was no longer in pain, though she didn't seem too happy with the outcome.
But,
she tried to protest.
No buts, Castilia. Your sisters were kind enough to share their food with you, so you be sure to pay them back later.
Okay, Mummy,
she whined.
And?
The redhead crossed her arms demandingly.
And, thanks, Tyrinia. Thanks, Lily. You're welcome, sis.
They smiled in response. Truthfully speaking, Castilia would have probably been fine on her own. However, Boxy needed these excitable children as calm and collected as possible before the time came. Speaking of which, the effects of Hilda's tempest of rage would dissipate in around 5 more minutes, The Republic forces caused terrible casualties to the Empire's troops at the moment, but that would only last as long as that dwarf's ultimate was giving them an edge. They would pull back as soon as it ended, and the mimic-minded shapeshifter wanted its fair share of man-flesh before that happened.
Now then, Mummy needs to step out for a while,
Kira stated.
I promise I'll be back in time for the big surprise, or if someone hurts you again. So stay put and be good until then, okay?
The dryads seemed disappointed, but still nodded their heads in affirmation. Boxy gave each of them a peck on their foreheads to cheer them up, and then set out to do what it did best. Spread death and misery. Down on the ground, Cora was still fighting the human troops that rushed her after she gave Hilda a lift. Even if she was a berserker herself, she was nowhere near that dwarf's level. Not only were the various skills and effects of her secondary job far less pronounced, but her fist's reach was nowhere near as wide as that dwarf's inhumane axe. As such, they had been constantly accumulating damage on her. She bled all over the place with a body covered in gashes and riddled with arrows and half her face melted off by magic. Someone had drilled a hole clean through her chest, and she had even lost one of her left arms somewhere along the way. As one might expect, neither her bloodlust nor her grin had diminished in the slightest.
Come here, cupcake!
The heavily injured fiend reached out with one of her hands and gripped onto a human soldier's head with enough force to cause both his skull and helmet to creak ominously. He screamed in pain and desperately swung his sword at her arm, but it only bounced helplessly off her gauntlets. Cora then lifted the poor man off his feet and swung him about like a rag doll, pushing his comrades away with his body. He had gone completely limp by this point, but whether it was because he passed out or passed away was irrelevant, as what was left of him was flung into the path of an oncoming icy comet spell. The two projectiles collided, and the result was something that could only be described as dirty fireworks. In the next instant, her torso was pierced from behind by three separate spears that went almost halfway through her. The fiend gritted her teeth and bent over forward with all her might, delivering a headbutt to the guy directly in front of her and splaying him out on the ground with a dent in his helmet. The soldiers behind her kept a firm grip on their spears and found themselves launched into the air by the sudden motion, as if hurled by a demon-shaped catapult.
War stomp!
The fiend's martial arts smashed what was left of his head into a pulp, while also cracking the ground around her. The sudden tremors made some of the Empire's troops lose their footing and stumble. Cora picked one such off-balanced target at random and swung both her rights at him. The man put up his shield just in time, but the impact from the double-handed punch lifted him off his feet and threw him several meters into the air. He fell back to the ground, reeling from the pain. His kite shield had two distinct fist-shaped imprints on them. His arm was definitely broken, and he dropped his weapon during liftoff. But he was most assuredly alive. Even if the fiend's ridiculous strength and heavy weight meant she could send people flying with a single punch, that didn't necessarily mean they were done for. In fact, she only killed about 30, maybe 40 people in this entire battle. This bunch were far less shaken and a lot more in control than the ones in that night raid a week or so prior. That, and most of her victims, fell back to get treatment while their comrades covered for them. Even if she could toss these goons around all day, it was quite difficult for her to finish them off if they didn't die in the first few hits. That was unlikely to happen, considering the quality of their armor and training.
That's why you shouldn't send them flying, but bury them into the ground instead.
Her master's words of wisdom flashed through Cora's head. She knew that would-be Box was right, but since it was advice rather than an order, she hadn't really listened. There was just something immensely satisfying about literally blowing people away, even if it wasn't necessarily fatal. And if there was one thing Cora valued above all else, it was her own enjoyment. Therefore, she pushed away those thoughts of efficiency and charged at her next victim. She curled her biceps to strike, but her master quite literally beat her to the punch. A gigantic, barrel-chested figure landed on the man in front of her. Well, it landed on a few of them that were bunched up together, but that was beside the point. After using the Empire's soldiers to cushion his fall, he stood up at a height that was almost equal to Korra's. His head was covered by a face wrap that hid all of his features aside from his yellow eyes and the pale skin around them. A heavy flowing cloak concealed the entirety of his body. Its silver color and the image of a black swooping eagle on the back clearly declaring his allegiance. Just in case his deliberately stomping down on Imperial troops wasn't enough of a hint, the Sandman was quite literally draped in the Ishigar Republic's flag.
True darkness.
His deep voice rang out, and a huge dome of blackness that was a little over 20 meters in diameter covered the field around him. The human soldiers near the edge instinctively retreated. Although true darkness merely robbed the area around a warlock of all visible light, that didn't mean it actually did any damage. However, their decision was definitely the right one, as the shrill screams and unpleasant crunching noises heard from within that world of darkness signified it was not a safe place to be. After several seconds, the lightless bubble went deathly silent. One of the higher-ranking humans gave an order to brace for attack. The soldiers rapidly established a shield wall perimeter several meters away from it while others ran off to fetch aid. The Republic's troops held the line immediately in front of the breached wall, some 200 meters south of their location. Whoever or whatever that terrifying figure they caught a glimpse of was, it was completely cut off from any hope of reinforcements. Of course, they didn't know it yet, but they were the ones about to be begging for backup. A multitude of figures burst out of the darkness before it had a chance to dissipate. Leading the charge, as per usual, was Korra. Her wounds and missing arm had fully regenerated thanks to a rejuvenation potion Boxy had borrowed from the elves' stockpiles. Using it on an expendable demon was something of a waste, but it wasn't shiny and didn't cost the shapeshifter anything. That, and it wouldn't have to spend its MP resummoning her. Which was good. The fiend stretched her arms out to the side and then swung them forward with all her might.
Thunderclap!
The two pairs of palms met each other with explosive force, producing a powerful, ear-splitting shockwave that swept over the human forces in front of her. The ones closest to her were knocked down to the ground from the sheer force of it, while those around them keeled over while clutching their ears. As expected of a berserker's martial art, it was extremely effective on those weaker than the user. The fiend's unnatural physique had only further amplified its power. The one that leapt out alongside her was a horse-sized, lizard-like creature made of molten rock that charged headfirst into the Empire's perimeter. Although they might have been able to body block it under normal conditions, the soldiers were all reeling from Korra's thunderclap. The cone-shaped shockwave had either thrown their sense of balance out of whack or had outright ruptured their eardrums. Under those conditions, they could do little to stop the molten guardian from trampling over them and literally blazing a trail through their ranks. The magical construct's owner flew out of the wall of blackness a moment after the first two. Zira's usual fetishistic outfit was transformed into a beautiful silver-colored gown so as to mark her very temporary allegiance. The purely decorative garment was backless, strapless, and, as the slit skirt fluttering teasingly between her legs revealed, also underwearless. The succubus silently entered the area of true darkness under the effects of invisibility after her beloved master's grand entrance. She was already sharing the flames of her passion with the Empire's troops. Or, to put it another way, she cackled like a maniac as she burned people alive with a barrage of fireball, flamethrower, and inferno spells. Normally, the humans would shoot spells right back at her, but the trained soldiers' hearts had already been broken. First, they had to deal with the monstrous dwarf. Then, they had to watch out for that winged woman that didn't care if her own comrades got caught up in her battle. Following those was the appearance of that truly terrifying demon. Then that dome of blackness had appeared before they realized what was even going on. They were barely keeping it together as they made a perimeter around it, only to have that four-armed menace come out fully recovered and accompanied by even more creatures of similar strength. Their breaking point came when the true darkness spell dissipated, mere seconds after that dangerous trio revealed themselves. The veil lifted on a scene where the dozen or so soldiers that were caught up in the spell had disappeared. The only traces of them were several puddles of fresh blood and an untold number of bloodied, mangled armor pieces scattered about. That hadn't been what finally broke the Imperial soldiers' morale. The people outside the circle had given up on the ones caught inside it. Not seeing any corpses actually made the horrible truth a bit easier to swallow. It was the lone figure that stood in the middle of it all that made the high-strung men finally snap under the pressure. Two and a half meters tall, drenched head to toe in fresh blood, cackling maniacally with a truly otherworldly voice, and practically exuding the stench of death. The shock of that terrifying sight, combined with the effects of both Butcher of Humanity and Despair Aura, hit the surrounding humans with full force, breaking wavering hearts and minds. It was at the level where they beat a disorderly, panicked retreat. They ran with all their might, trampling their fallen comrades underfoot and discharging various bodily fluids as they went. The monster leapt at their fleeing backs and caught up to them in an instant. It mercilessly ripped them limb from limb with its bare hands, and the few people brave enough to look back would realize that a good number of those severed limbs disappeared somewhere under that cloak. At some point, the incarnation of death chasing them picked up a greatsword off of one of the corpses and did its best Hilda impersonation as it mercilessly hacked through them. Rather than cut people neatly in half like the dwarf's axe, the weakly enchanted weapon simply crushed them into pulp. It was no longer a blade, but an oddly shaped steel club. It was still technically a sword, which was more or less exactly what its wielder was after. Level up! Congratulations, you are now a level 18 blade dancer. Dexterity plus 2, endurance plus 2, strength plus 1, agility plus 1. The Sandman charged forward alongside its minions, mercilessly mowing down everyone in sight, like a gardener clearing the weeds, humans, so that the crops, levels, may grow. The creature reaped quite the bountiful harvest indeed. Level up! Congratulations, you are now a level 19 blade dancer. Dexterity plus 2, endurance plus 2, strength plus 1, agility plus 1. It might have encountered more difficulties if those humans turned around and counterattacked in an organized fashion, but that was unlikely to happen. Panic and fear could spread like a wildfire, and Boxy was even more of an arsonist than Snack when it came to matters of psychological warfare. Level up! Congratulations, you are now a level 48 warlock. Intelligence plus 2, mental fortitude plus 2, endurance plus 2. Of course, it wasn't just the newly acquired blade dancer job that steadily gained levels. The fact it had all three familiars out on the field doing work caused its second oldest job to steadily progress as well. And yes, Claws was out here too. Although these rank-and-file soldiers had little chance of detecting her presence, she was so good at hiding herself away that her streak of assassinations went unnoticed in all the confusion. The most that her victims might have perceived was a shadow or a blur skitter past the edge of their sight right before she took their heads. Those standing next to the ones killed had no idea who or what had just murdered their comrades, which did not help their delicate states of mind in the slightest. One could hardly blame them. Even Boxy had trouble tracking her position sometimes. That was just how adept she was at staying out of sight. It was honestly quite pleased with her performance, to the point where it would be hard-pressed to choose between her and Arms as its third favorite minion. Snack was still the absolute tastiest, so she was the undisputed champion in that category. The runner-up was Fizzy, for entirely different reasons. The shapeshifter thoroughly enjoyed caressing and tongue-polishing her shiny mithril frame head to toe whenever it had the chance to. She seemed to somewhat enjoy it too, even though her metal skin didn't have a sense of touch. Ambrosia was definitely at the bottom of its list, as Boxy still wasn't quite sure whether that dungeon core could keep her loyalties in check. At least her language lessons improved as of late as she steadily learned how to teach others. The Dryad even got a hold of the mentor skill somewhere along the way and was diligently practicing her cooking skill as instructed, both of which were already at level 3. Still, as useful as she was, She was still a potential threat that Boxy had to treat with a certain amount of care. Well, not too much care. Her true nature was that of a monster, so the two of them naturally saw eye to eye on most topics, despite the dryad being tainted by the influence of an elf-loving goddess. At the very least, Boxy was sure its lair would be safe, as its experiments revealed she would not forgive intruders in her dungeon, regardless of whether they were elves or not. Though, that particular test was not something the shapeshifter intended to repeat. The state of the hapless adventurers it had invited into the dryad's domain had been less than appetizing.
Level up! Congratulations! You are now a level 20 blade dancer. Dexterity +2, endurance +2, strength +1, agility +1.
The shapeshifter continued slaughtering people as it let its thoughts stray towards useless things. It was already at the stage where the act of murdering helpless, terrified humans was so routine it could probably do so in its sleep. That was why it could casually navigate its status and skill windows as its limbs mechanically took lives. And the reason it did so was because it wanted to unlock a certain blade dancer skill that Kira had been told to look out for. Proficiency level increased. Evasion is now level 1. Agility +3. Endurance +1. This one was actually a common skill that quite a few jobs had access to, including Rogue and Ranger. Its effects were normally quite subtle in that they assisted the user's movements when it came to dodging and avoiding attacks completely. However, it was a skill that grew stronger the more agility one had. Both Boxy and Kira had that attribute in spades. Although the shapeshifter was quite good at dodging things already, being able to do so without any wasted movements would let it counterattack more easily. There was far more to an efficient dodge than simply moving out of the way, after all. Proficiency level increased. Evasion is now level 3. Agility +6. Endurance +2. Like, for example, that Shadow Bolt spell it just avoided by ducking under it. It let the mass of darkness pass just over the top of its head. If it had dodged it the way it normally did, then...
Wait, evasion gained 2 whole levels?
It didn't have time to fully ponder the implications of this sudden development, as Sandman's hulking figure moved with uncanny speed to avoid yet another one of them. Proficiency level increased. Evasion is now level 4. Agility +3. Endurance +1. Just how dangerous were those spells to give it that much proficiency? The creature leapt back from its position and broke off its pursuit of the fleeing Imperial soldiers. A third Shadow Bolt came flying at it from well outside the spell's standard range of 30 meters, but this one was blocked by claws. The stalker demon appeared seemingly out of nowhere and used her back-mounted sickle legs to cut through the incoming projectile well before it reached her master. Arms, Snack, and the affectionately named Smokey also broke off their pursuit and rushed to Boxy's side. As the ever-retreating line of Imperial soldiers drew farther away, the shapeshifter could finally identify its attacker. It was, of course, a warlock. A particularly old one at that. Much like Boxy, he also had 3 familiars out on the field. The first one was obviously a fiend. A towering pile of muscle slightly taller than arms. Unlike her, however, this one was a male with the standard set of limbs, although his arms were probably twice as thick as they needed to be. His skin was a pale, dull color somewhere between blue and purple, and his legs ended in a pair of thick hooves. His facial features were obscured by a steel-like helmet, and the metallic horns that protruded from its sides were very bull-like in their appearance. His left arm, shoulder, hand, and leg were encased in shining, thick armor, while the right half of his body was nothing but bare, chiseled muscle. In his right hand, he carried a huge glaive that reminded Boxy of Overlord Nagnamor, and a pair of tight, short shorts hid his groin from view. The second demon was a hellhound, a massive canine creature that was a size bigger than Smokey the Molten Guardian. It had a wolf-like head that let black smoke out of its nostrils with every breath. Hissing, bright yellow drool dripped from its growling mouth. The sharp fangs in its jaws and the long claws poking out of its paws went from a dim red at their base to a bright yellow at their tips, as if formed from half-molten steel. Its thick fur was a fitting gray like burnt ash, and flaming eyes made it impossible to tell which way it looked. The third demon was a green-skinned beholder that looked a lot like the one that Chester Underwood had seen back in Bootsplit. What was his name again? Thumpit or something? Regardless, it had the same array of 10 tentacle-like eye stalks coming out of its floating head of a body, all of which were fixed directly onto the Sandman as it levitated over his master's head. As for the master in question, he had a marvelous gray beard that went all the way down to his stomach. His body was draped in a plain-looking blue robe while a matching wide-brimmed hat was on his head. His gnarled hand carried a thick wooden staff that looked more like a large stick than a magic item. All in all, the old man's equipment made him look just like the level 40 or so magic users in the Empire's army. However, the fact he was able to stare unflinchingly at the Sandman, a being that should appear as nothing less than terror incarnate to such people, proved he was clearly not one of them. It took Boxy a few moments, but it remembered that it had actually seen this man once before. Even if it sometimes struggled with names, the monster rarely forgot a face, and this particular one had made quite the impression about a month ago. He was one of the people riding that fancy carriage Boxy had encountered shortly after its rank up into a doppelganger, the mysterious nobleman that the shapeshifter had decided to let go on its way out of the Empire. This was a decision that would soon prove to have been the right one.
"Greetings, Mr. Underwood,"
said the old man in a thoroughly excited voice.
"My name is Arakawa Shinji, and I..."
Boxy threw a poisoned knife at Shinji while he was running his mouth. Unfortunately for the shapeshifter, the blade bounced off an invisible barrier mere centimeters in front of the startled warlock's face and fell harmlessly to the ground.
"Okay. See here, I don't..."
Something metal bounced off the old man's magical shield again.
"God damn it!"
he yelled, clearly frustrated.
"Fine, have it!"
In what was becoming a trend, the old man's words were cut off as the rebounded metal orb in the air split open in the next instant. The artificer-made flashbang did just as its name implied as it flashed and it banged. One would think a cheap trick like that wouldn't work on a ranker, but as Boxy learned firsthand, it was nigh impossible to overcome certain biological reactions with status alone. Its own heightened perception worked against it when it accidentally activated the Elder Dryad's authority as Kira. It rolling around on the floor while screaming its lungs out hadn't been an act, but the creature's genuine reaction to the blinding light. It was quite proud of itself for managing to stay in character despite the unexpected and painful occurrence. Therefore, even if its opponent was one of the Empire's VIPs, it was inevitable that Shinji and maybe even the demons around him would have been blinded by that, even if for a little while. Boxy used those precious few moments to turn around and run away with all its might. Part 5. Boxy wasn't sure exactly what that old warlock wanted with it, nor did it really care. Its self-preservation instincts kicked up the instant the ranker identified himself. This was not an opponent it could defeat easily, if at all, so it really had no business even trying. Unfortunately, the monster's instantaneous surprise attack had been thwarted by some form of transparent magical shield. The most likely culprit would be Shenji's beholder familiar, as that sort of thing was one of their specialties. It certainly wasn't a warlock skill, since the shapeshifter knew firsthand just how few defensive options the job offered. All things considered, the fact it failed to remotely stab Shinji in the face wasn't entirely unexpected. No enlightened individual would have gotten to level 100 if they could be caught by something that basic, but Boxy had to at least try. After all, the best way to kill a powerful caster was to do it before they knew their life was in danger, and assassinations weren't going to happen so long as that beholder was around. Boxy had then undertaken the safest course of action, which was to flashbang the lot of them and run away. It didn't know what jobs or attributes that old man had, but he had no chance of catching up to a runaway monster on foot considering the relative frailty of a magic user's body. And to its credit, the shapeshifter was quite right. That ranker had neither the ability nor the desire to chase after it. His pet, however, was another case entirely. The Sandman's hulking figure barely covered a distance of 15 meters before Boxy sensed something large coming directly at it from behind. The monster didn't even stop to think as it kicked the ground, moving sideways with an exaggerated motion as it narrowly avoided the hellhound's pounce. It wasn't a clean dodge, however, as the canine demon's burning claws still managed to tear off the doppelganger's left arm. The hellhound left a trail of smoke and sparks as it brought its body around and charged at its target again. But Boxy was ready for it this time.
Massive rejection!
A wall of invisible force shot out from Boxy's hastily reconstructed left hand while its right firmly gripped onto the void caller staff. The wolf demon ran face first into it and found its large body thrown several meters backwards with a surprised yelp. It landed on its side and rolled over once before stopping itself by digging its claws into the ground.
Shadowbind!
Boxy's next spell produced a large number of shadowy chains that rose up from underneath the momentarily staggered demon. They wrapped around its legs, neck, and body, causing it to fall over on its side before firmly lashing it to the ground.
That should hold it for a while.
While hellhounds boasted some of the best speed and tracking ability among demonkind, their actual muscle strength fell behind that of fiends. They simply weren't as physically adept as they appeared. Putting it another way, their high-speed fighting style was similar to that of a blade dancer or rogue in that it relied more on finesse than raw power. Their feral nature also made them the most simple-minded type of familiar that a warlock could form a contract with. The upside was, it made them far easier to control and keep a leash on than other familiar types. However, this also made them rather straightforward and predictable, making it easy for a magic user to nail them with their spells so long as they could keep up with their speed. A criterion this monstrous warlock was just barely able to fulfill. Boxy took this opportunity to check in on the three wonderfully expendable minions it left behind to cover its escape. Arms and Smokey were doing a splendid job of body-blocking Shinji's glaive-wielding fiends. The red-skinned demoness used all four of her arms to fend off her kin's weapon, while the molten guardian slashed and bit at his legs. Objectively speaking, their teamwork was horrible and they were unquestionably weaker than their opponent, but the two-on-one meant they were still able to ever so slightly hold him off for the moment. Snack circled around and bombarded that beholder with fireballs and magma missiles. Her attacks had very little effect, however, as the mini-eyed floating head effortlessly deflected her spells with its defensive magic. As for the VIP himself, Claws kept him busy by neutralizing all his spells with her back-mounted scythes. That wouldn't last long, though, as her counterspell skill would drain her MP long before that warlock ran out of his own magical reserves. Normally, she'd just gut the guy and bite his head off. But she wasn't able to get close enough to make it happen while that beholder was covering the warlock. The only reason she could hold her ground at all was probably because a significant number of warlock spells were ineffective against demons. As if to prove that point, the hellhound broke free of its bindings after only a few seconds with a piercing howl. It growled and glared at its target for a moment before leaping at Boxy once again.
Massive rejection. Shadowbind.
The ashen wolf demon then found itself right back where it started. Boxy did some more thinking and realized that running away was a bad idea. Both a hellhound and a beholder had its scent, so simply falling back and hoping for the best was stupid. It was only a matter of time before the other side's superior power overwhelmed its own. Even then, it was unlikely that old warlock would give up so easily. The fact he had called the towering mercenary Mr. Underwood just now implied he had come here hoping to find his fellow warlock. That beholder had probably revealed Boxy's nature as a shapeshifter by now, so there was a good chance that news might spread and reach a certain spymaster should Boxy let this guy go. So, if running was a foregone conclusion, then how about fighting? Well, if Boxy was going to do something, it had to do it fast, so it wasted no time assessing its options. The best method of dealing with high-level magic users, namely assassination, was clearly no longer an option. Using the dryads was one way to get the drop on him, But Boxy had no way to give them orders right now. They only listened to Mummy to begin with, and the effects of the Elder Dryad's authority did not extend to Boxy's familiars. Any orders relayed through them would therefore be ignored, and the quintuplets were unlikely to do anything on their own after Boxy had explicitly told them to stay put. It was regrettable, but on second thought, even the Dryads couldn't do much. The opponent had a beholder, and beholders had mana locator glands even more advanced than Boxy's. So long as that floating mass of eyes was around, any dirty tricks the ex-mimic might have tried would get spotted immediately. And since Shinji was a level 100 warlock, it was safe to assume he was very experienced in controlling his familiars and giving them airtight instructions. In short, if Boxy was going to do anything, it had to take out that beholder first. The real question was whether that human had soul link like Boxy did. Thankfully, the shapeshifter had just the thing it needed to test this out.
Shadowbind!
The mimic restrained the hellhound just as it broke free of its second set of bindings. It activated Power Overwhelming, letting a flashy aura of crackling energy wrap around its cloaked figure. It grabbed hold of its staff with both arms and raised it above its head, as if it were an axe.
Reality Slash!
The skull-tipped rod swung diagonally along with those words. There was a brief, narrow flash of light as if a blade swung to mirror the mimic's movements. The motion was followed by something invisible that cleaved a deep gash through the blood-soaked ground before colliding with the chained hellhound dead on. Your target has suffered a deep cut. Target HP minus 2,561. The beast let out a howl of pain as the spell dug deep into its flesh. It managed to weave its head out of the way in the last moment, but the reality slash split its shoulder and part of its torso wide open. The magic also smashed through the magical chains restraining the creature, but it was in no position to start running wild. Boxy didn't have any intention of giving it the chance to do so either.
Shadowbind!
Being a ruin spell, the next Shadowbind was also influenced by the effects of Power Overwhelming as it chained the half-headless wolf to the ground with enough force to strangle the life out of it if given enough time. The shapeshifter didn't have any intention of putting that to the test, of course.
Reality Slash!
Your target has been decapitated. Target HP minus 3,734. Completely robbed of its freedom, the fiery wolf demon could no longer avoid having its head split wide open like a gourd in a guillotine. Its massive body fell to the ground, where it would remain motionless until it dissolved into nothing shortly after. This sort of explosive damage output made Boxy extremely wary of that warlock. It varied from person to person, but it was doubtless that Shinji was capable of doing a lot more than that. Provided that he had access to Power Overwhelming, of course. But he was plenty dangerous even without it. The upside was that he clearly hadn't opted to learn the Soul Link skill, otherwise that hellhound would not have died so easily. The shapeshifter had no idea why the man opted out of getting the ability, but it was a decision he would soon regret.
Snack! Stop wasting time on that eye and come to me!
It commanded telepathically while it ran back to its minions. The succubus responded with a curt,
Yes, master!
Before she stopped trying to fruitlessly drop meteors on the beholder and flew towards Boxy. Shinji realized they were up to something and sent a reality slash of his own at her, but claws leapt through the air and cut the invisible guillotine in half. It was an impressive feat, although she failed to get the angle right and lost one of her back-mounted limbs in the process. A deep cut appeared on both Korra and Zira's backs as the damage was split through their soul link. However, damage wasn't the only thing the skill shared between them.
Here, drink this.
Once the succubus was close enough, Boxy threw a vial of pink liquid at her. Zira caught it, uncorked it, and downed it as fast as she could. A bright pink aura shone out of her body, and the regenerative effects of the high-quality and highly toxic rejuvenation potion were transmitted to the other two. All three demons' wounds closed up as if time ran backwards. Even Drea's lost spider-like limb grew out of her upper back as if it was never gone.
Dark Infusion!
Next, the shapeshifter empowered all of its familiars at once by using the succubus as this normally short-ranged spell's target. Zira moaned, Korra roared, and Drea chittered as they felt their bodies swell with power. The fiend benefited the most as the sudden influx of strength and speed allowed her to gain a temporary edge over the glaive-wielding fiend, and she knocked him back with a well-timed uppercut. If it was like this, she was quite sure she could kick his ass by herself. Unfortunately for her, her master had other plans.
Snack, you and Smokey keep that blue fiend busy. Claws, I'll distract the warlock while you and Arms get in position to take out the beholder.
It was times like this that Soul Link's shared telepathic connection was really useful. It allowed Boxy to give orders in a far more expedient manner than it would have been able to if it had to change mental channels all the time. It used the precious few moments it had saved to address its drastically lowered MP reserves. Power overwhelming may have allowed it to put down that hellhound in seconds, but it exhausted much of its magical energy in the process. Thankfully, Boxy had an easy fix for that. It tossed a trio of blue-tinted potions into a mouth it created under its cloak, smashing through the crystal vials with its teeth. You have used a mana potion. MP plus 500. The monster's familiars all moved to their position, and Shinji's eyes locked onto the Sandman's yellow orbs. There was something different about the way he looked at the towering figure, but Boxy had neither the luxury nor the interest to care about that. The old man started glowing with the very obvious visual effects of power overwhelming, sending the shapeshifter's survival instincts into overdrive. He pointed his staff directly at the cloaked figure and unleashed one of the most devastating anti-personnel warlock spells available.
Ebon Fire!
Being a warlock itself, Boxy not only anticipated it and recognized the incantation, but knew full well how to counter it. The Sandman's large body momentarily split in two as the distorted figure of a 13-year-old child with pitch-black skin and no face fell out from under that heavy silver-colored cloak. This was Boxy's true form and body, while the mirror image it left behind as a body double erupted in black flames and disappeared into ash. The exposed doppelganger immediately grew back into its former size and clad itself in a fresh disguise out of its storage. The sheer speed at which it operated its pocket dimension under duress rivaled that of Hilda's rearm, which was practically instantaneous. From Shinji's point of view, his opponent literally evaporated, only to see that a new Sandman popped up immediately behind the original. No. A brief mental check with his beholder confirmed that this was the real one, and the one his spell hit was just a soulless meat puppet. He tried using Ebon Fire once more, but the slippery creature avoided it in much the same way, eliciting a frustrated click of Shinji's tongue in response. That spell relied on the user's eyesight to pick a target, so he was unable to hit the real body if he couldn't see it, even if he knew where it was. Projectile-based spells were also useless, as that man... No, that monster was more than capable of avoiding them.
All right, let's see you dodge this,
the man grumbled.
Dark explosion!
This time, the cloaked creature used the brief gap between the incantation and the spell's actual activation to jump up into the air with all its might while covering as much of its body as possible with a steel carapace, courtesy of metal mimicry. The ground immediately below it was dented in the shape of a perfect hemisphere, almost as if it had been scooped out with a giant spoon. As for Boxy, it got thrown high up into the air as it was still well in range of that blast. You have been blown away by explosive force. HP minus 2,189. Its armored skin diffused part of the impact, the Void Caller staff boosted its magic resistance, and the damage was further mitigated by its natural armor skill. Yet, the monster still lost half its HP in an instant, and that was after it avoided the worst of the blast. The shapeshifter doubted even blood would have been left behind if it had taken a direct hit from that thing. In the meantime, the little... presence it had thrown at the shielded warlock's feet while he was chanting let off a chain of explosions. The man briefly shut his eyes so as to not get blinded, but those particular balls were fragmentation grenades, not flashbangs. Shinji wasn't blinded, but the flames, dirt, and smoke the explosives kicked up was enough to temporarily obscure his sight. Even if that beholder was capable of feeding his master with that information, learning about it secondhand was unlikely to help the human target the shapeshifter. The familiar's magical barrier nevertheless ensured his master was unharmed. Well, that pain-in-the-lid demon was about to be eliminated, so Boxy wasn't particularly worried about him. It also made a mental note to stock up on actual smoke bombs rather than forcing itself to improvise like that. Fragmentation grenades were expensive and time-consuming for an artificer to make, after all.
"Arms! Claws! Now!"
it called out.
"On it, boss!"
the fiend replied in high spirits.
"I really don't want to get near that guy,"
the stalker whined. A beholder simply had way too many eyes, even if Drea was mostly fine being seen by other demons. Mostly was definitely the operative word in that statement. Regardless, she still did as her master instructed and let Korra grab her by her primary set of legs. The fiend then spun around on her heels once, then twice, then threw the horribly embarrassed Drea through the air with a loud cry of,
"Aura! Mind Pulse!"
Shinji used a spell unknown to Boxy to disperse the cloud of debris around him sooner than expected. He looked up to see that his opponent hadn't come back down to the ground, but was gliding around on a set of bat-like wings after being thrown in the air by his magic. He was about to renew his assault when he caught a blur zoom by out of the corner of his eye. He turned his head just in time to see that troublesome and inexplicably airborne stalker from earlier collide with his beholder. Her claws and scythes ripped through the floating head's multi-layered barriers with ease. She dug her bladed limbs deep into its main eye, although she lost quite a bit of momentum by the time she got that close. Her victim roared in pain, but the actual damage was nowhere near enough to kill the beholder outright.
"Demonate!"
Boxy finished chanting its spell the instant after the stalker's claws firmly attached to the enemy's familiar. Her body shone with a bright green light for a moment before it exploded violently, killing both demons and scattering their various bits around.
"That's enough!" Shinji shouted. "Abyssal plane!"
The old warlock struck the ground with the bottom of his plain-looking staff, causing a thin purple film to spread rapidly over the trampled and bloodied soil underfoot. Boxy, Korra, Zira, Smokey, Shinji's sole surviving familiar, and anything else within 30 meters of the old man fell flat on the ground. The gravity around them had instantly increased tenfold, and none of them could support the weight of their own bodies. Zira was so physically weak that she started choking since she was unable to even breathe properly, while the stronger ones like the fiends or Boxy could do little else than weakly move their limbs around. Out of the corner of its eye, the shapeshifter saw the Republic's remaining snipers start taking shots at the VIP. However, their arrows merely crashed to the ground pretty much the instant they entered the ultimate skill's area of effect. Even the few spells that reached this far dissipated into nothingness almost immediately. Boxy tried casting some of its own, but no matter how much it chanted, it couldn't produce even a single shadow bolt. The overwhelming weight of the abyssal plane was powerful enough to disrupt magic itself. The one who had unleashed this terrifying skill was the sole person left standing, even if barely. Shinji really didn't want to use his ultimate, as maintaining it placed a heavy burden on his body and mind, but that blasted creature had forced his hand. He simply wanted to have a little chat with it, and it just lashed out like an angry toddler. The warlock limped over to where the cloaked shapeshifter had crash-landed and looked down at the pinned monster while leaning heavily on his staff. His black, glassy eyes gazed into Boxy's yellow orbs.
"You really need to listen to other people when they're speaking to you," he said with a low, rasping voice. "But I suppose it can't be helped. You're a monster, aren't you? You simply don't know any better."
"Talk is cheap,"
came the curt, aggressive reply.
"Nonsense. No matter how much one may try to use violence in lieu of conversation, words will always retain their power. Words are the means to meaning, and for those who will listen, the enunciation of the truth. And the truth is, there is something very much wrong with this world of yours.
What's that supposed to mean?
I'm not from around here, you know. I came to this realm about 60 years ago from elsewhere. A plane of reality where we understood each other with words, not with swords. A world where things such as attributes, skills, jobs, and levels were not part of everyday life and only existed in fiction. A place where gods and magic did not exist, and neither did monsters.
Sounds dull.
Dull? Oh, yes. That may have been so. But I would still go back there if I could. I'm not saying the people back home were flawless, but they were at least better than the ones here.
Why are you telling me all this?
Because nobody will listen unless I force them to.
Shinji's eyes and voice flashed with the pressure and intensity that only a rancor could give off.
My so-called fellow men all cling to their ancient beliefs, to those sideways morals that will lead this world into ruin. I mean, look at this war. It's bullshit. It's all manufactured to feed their greed. This is exactly what did and back during centuries ago.
There were some weird buzzing words mixed in there. It was extremely bizarre, almost as if the sounds that came out of the enraged old man's lips weren't syllables, but white noise. The odd event lended some credibility to the rumor that this man was supposedly an otherworlder, though Boxy had no idea what he was rambling about.
Don't even get me started on all that slavery business,
the man continued.
Sometimes I wonder if those other nobles are worse than the thousands of monsters I've killed since I got here. And of course, none of them even tried to establish peaceful relations with the less advanced civilizations around us, treating them like vermin that needed to be eradicated.
The shapeshifter was finally starting to grasp what this old man was getting at, and it was honestly kind of disappointed. It had expected to hear some intrinsic truth of the world that only someone from outside of it could understand, but all it got instead was this moronic drivel.
Not a single drop of effort to stop this perpetual cycle of violence and revenge,
Shinji carried on.
Why? Because the ones they need to understand are not people, but monsters. Creatures that they see as nothing but loot and XP. What sort of blind prejudice is that? I mean, yes, they do attack people on sight, but who can blame them after we subjected them to generation after generation of genocide?
The man's rant tapered off as he breathed heavily.
But you,
he continued with renewed vigor,
you're different, aren't you? You're practical, pragmatic, logical. You've seen both sides of the fence. That's why I thought I could get through to you, make you understand that there has to be a better way than this endless cycle of mutual destruction.
You're right. There probably is.
You agree, then?
Indeed. However,
your mass has been reduced by 40%. Your weight has been reduced by 40%. After secretly equipping two of Kira's rings underneath its cloak, the burden on Boxy's bones and muscles became only a third of what it used to be. Its body still felt much heavier than normal, but it was no longer enough to limit its movement. It lunged upwards at the surprised, almost delighted-looking old man and grabbed him by the neck with its left hand, its grip choking the life out of the old man.
It's not nearly as tasty,
it growled. Boxy transformed its right arm into a giant metal spike and stabbed the suffocating old man through the chest, then the stomach, then the chest again, then wherever else it hadn't already put a hole in him, over and over. On the sixth or seventh strike, it felt something snap underneath its ever-tightening grip on his neck, and Shinji Arakawa, the man who claimed to have come here from another world, went completely limp.
Level up! Level up! Level up! Congratulations, you are now a level 50 warlock.
intelligence plus 4, mental fortitude plus 4, endurance plus 4. Congratulations, you are now a level 23 doppelganger. All attributes plus 2. Feat of strength performed. You have unlocked a new perk. Anti-centennial.
Ah, should have used a sword.
The monster muttered regretfully at the missed opportunity as the effects of the ultimate skill around it instantly dissipated. It discreetly collected the old man's corpse into its storage and turned its attention towards a retreat.
Snack! Get yourself back to the hideout! Move!
The succubus panted as she picked herself up off the ground.
Yes! Right away, master!
She forced herself to stand, then cloaked herself in invisibility and flew off towards the closest hilt tree, the one due north of Boxy's current position. Out of the corner of its eye, it noticed Shinji's formerly bound fiend pick himself up off the ground and give his liberator a thumbs up.
Thanks for that,
he spoke with a deep, thundering voice.
I really don't know how much more of that moron's bullshit I could stand. Anyway, if you'll excuse me, I have a few decades worth of resentment to vent and plenty of unwilling participants to help me out.
He strode off towards the Imperial ranks with his glaive held hoisted on his shoulder, chuckling ominously. It was none of Boxy's business what an unbound fiend was about to do, but it concluded it was probably a good thing he targeted the humans rather than elves. Putting that guy's existence out of its mind, the shapeshifter forcibly dismissed the highly conspicuous arms and chanted a spell. It was actually in a bit of a rush, as that little showdown had attracted too much attention. While it did want its employers to notice the Sandman's contributions to the battle, this was the wrong kind of attention. At the very least, Boxy had a bit of time, so it wasn't particularly worried as it steadily mumbled the magic-inducing gibberish under its breath.
Snack, how far did you get?
It called out mentally, just as it was about to finish.
I'm just entering the upper canopy right now, Master.
It wasn't ideal, but good enough.
Transfamiliar.
With a shouted word of arcane power, the Sandman's towering, cloaked figure vanished in a puff of green smoke. In his place appeared a very confused-looking succubus that fell over face-first from the post-transfer disorientation. Zira lifted her face off the dirt and looked up, just in time to catch a glimpse of something headed straight towards her. It was a black-haired, golden-winged woman, her bloodied metal staff already mid-swing.
Well,
your familiar has been banished. Part 6. Boxy, having just transitioned back into Kira mode, licked its lips at the absolutely delicious perk it got from that encounter. Anti-centennial. Those who stand on the shoulders of giants will never attain the heights of those who have trampled said giants underfoot. Requirements: single-handedly kill an ultimate skill holder. Effects: increases all XP gained by 10%. Tasty rewards aside, the shapeshifter considered just how lucky it was to come out of that fight the victor. In its haste and greed, it had completely neglected to consider a level 100 human's ultimate skill before engaging him in combat. Logically speaking, an ultimate was always related to the job it came from, so a warlock that focused almost entirely on offensive power should normally have one that was excessively destructive. Or at least, that's what common sense dictated. And yet Shinji's abyssal zone had seemed surprisingly lackluster. That wasn't to say that the old man's ultimate wasn't powerful. It was doubtless that any human or elf who didn't have a significant amount of strength and endurance would have been crushed flat under that enormous pressure. It also affected everything around the user indiscriminately and interfered with magic to some degree. Even the warlock's own fiend couldn't move freely inside it. In the end, all the ultimate had done was to stall and prolong the fight since that warlock seemed unable to do anything to Boxy other than tie it down and throw words at it. He might have had some way or another to finish off his restrained opponent, but the shapeshifter had not given him the chance. Looking at it objectively, the thing that had truly saved Boxy back there was Kira. More specifically, the two weight-reducing rings that were part of her disguise. That delusional old man had been rather unfortunate to pick this particular individual as his opponent. It was almost as if the universe conspired to have him and his idiotic views disappear from Terrania. Which, considering he'd most likely been influenced by the Agent of Chaos skill in the past, might have actually been the case. Regardless of the circumstances, Boxy had once again profited immensely from someone else's misfortune, and there was yet more potential gain. The shapeshifter, now safely concealed by the hilt tree's canopy, decided to process Shinji's body before it returned to the dryad's little hidey hole. Using corpse absorption directly in front of them seemed like a bad idea since it might ruin the illusion of mummy. Wait, was it even a good idea to use corpse absorption to begin with? It was undoubtedly a high-quality corpse, but Boxy had some doubts when it considered the possible results. That skill always targeted the highest-ranking parts of one's status, so realistically speaking, there were only four possible outcomes. The most likely one would be failure, which would be of no consequence. The second most likely would be an attribute gain, which would be intelligence without a doubt. The tastiest would be if it absorbed a whole bunch of warlock job levels. The final favorable result would be a skill gain. So, while most likely it would get either a huge chunk of intelligence or a big fat nothing, it didn't want to waste the potential of the other two. Job levels being absorbed would be a huge waste since it was already at level 50. Any XP gained at this stage would still be stored until it got the job advanced, but doing things that way would greatly diminish the amount gained. After a brief moment of deliberation, it concluded that, in order to make sure it got the most out of Shinji's donation, the shapeshifter would need to find a level 75 warlock trainer first. As for the potential skill gain, that was going to be either Ruin Mastery or Domination Mastery, most likely the former. Cadaver absorption would transfer the highest leveled skill of its target, and the maximum level of mastery type skills grew by 5 every time a relevant job advanced. As a level 100 warlock, Shinji most likely had at least one that was at level 25. The skills he had unlocked from his job were forever stuck at level 10, making it impossible for them to even compete. His ultimate was completely out of the question since those abilities only had a single level to begin with. This mental arithmetic wasn't just blind conjecture, but the results of much trial and error. After all, Boxy had so far only gained various mastery levels whenever it absorbed a corpse's skill. The fact it managed to obtain divine attunement from that relatively low-leveled priest was pretty much an exception, as her holy mastery was probably not maxed out. The shapeshifter had also gotten acid spray from those giant crab-like monsters during its time in Erosa, but that too was an exception since feral creatures very rarely had any form of mastery. Either way, Boxy's current ruin mastery level was 12 out of 15. If it gained a whole lot of proficiency for it from Shinji's corpse, then it had a feeling much of it would be wasted, just like the potential warlock levels. The other outcomes of the cadaver absorption were that it might fail or just provide a bunch of intelligence, neither of which were time-sensitive. Therefore, Boxy decided to hold off on absorbing the corpse and kept it in its storage. That airless space would keep the body from decomposing for a while. The shapeshifter had no idea why it worked like that, but it noticed that any food in its pocket dimension took much longer to spoil than it normally would. Besides, it could still absorb a halfway rotted corpse as long as the head and heart were intact, so it had plenty of time to come up with a more long-term way of preserving the body. As for the items the man wore, the robes and staff were not some disguised high-end magic items, but the same relatively low-grade stuff the rest of the Empire's forces had. At least the jewelry was on point. That human wore a number of magic rings and a shiny-looking silver amulet with a dark orange gem embedded in it. All of them had different enchantments, of course, as only the effect with the highest magnitude would apply should multiple enchantments provide the same bonus. The shapeshifter, in an ever-increasing trend of realizing its own ignorance, had no clue as to what caused this strange limitation. It had tried asking about it as Kira, but that only ended with the simple-minded creature being bombarded with a whole lot of strange words and technical terms it hadn't encountered before. What had that gnomish enchanter said? The something-or-other coefficient could not do its thing while another thing interfered with the third thing? And what the crap was a 5-point conflux event supposed to be? Oh well. It wasn't as if Boxy actually cared about the minute details. It had asked more out of sheer curiosity rather than a desire to learn things. The shapeshifter had tons of practical knowledge anyway. For instance, it knew 84 distinct ways to end a person's life, either directly or remotely, on top of having an encyclopedic knowledge of enlightened anatomy. It could also put an explosive device together with both its eyes and MLG closed. That was all the information it needed to do the things it wanted to do and get the stuff it wanted to get at this stage in its life. Anything else was just pointless trivia. Thinking about its mimicked mana locator gland, Boxy found its mood go slightly sour. It reminded the monster of its continued inability to copy a beholder's far superior version of the sensory organ. It wasn't difficult to find one of those many-eyed heads floating around Azure Vale, so it had had plenty of opportunities to study and copy their MLG. Unfortunately, the way it worked was completely alien to the shapeshifter, especially the part where the whole thing was completely detached and just sort of floated around inside the demon's body. It also spun around wildly around each axis. It was not the sort of organ a doppelganger's core shapeshifting was physically capable of mimicking, even if applying that osmosis trick Boxy had learned during its attempts at creating organic wheels. Having arrived just outside the Dryad Quintuplet's safe space, Kira